That's all true. But in writing that book, I was talking with Richard and Lois Shelton at dinner. We were talking about nailing down things in your past. When you write autobiography, you find out how in many ways it's the perfect fiction, in the same way that somebody like Henry Steele Commager or Arnold Toynbee are great novelists. You know, they take all this stuff and scramble it up. And I was having a little fun with history in there. And you can make it say whatever you want to say. It depends upon how good a storyteller you are. But when you're writing autobiography, there inevitably comes that moment when you stop and you say, no, wait a minute. Did that happen? Or am I making that up? And sometimes you can't tell because things are happening inside of you. There's a piece I wrote in that book about my mother. And she read it last year before she passed away. And I asked her about it. I said, what did you think of that piece about you? There was a period when she was trying to be Sarah Vaughan. I mean, she really practiced. She'd listen to Sarah's records and she'd rehearse and she was really trying to do that. And I said, well, how'd you like that? Because I really strained to get everything right. She said, was that supposed to be me? I said, yeah. She says, well, the only way I could deal with that is, I said, in Al's profession, he has to have a lot of imagination. Can't win. I should have lied. Sitting Pretty is a novel that some reviewer called a blues novel, and I kind of like that. So when it comes out again, I'm going to have him put on there a blues novel by Al Young. You know how Richard Brautigan does a Japanese novel and all that. People like to get a handle on things. And I'm going to read a short passage from it, which is chapter 16. The story is this. This is 1 year in the life of a sort of likable ne'er-do-well named Sidney J. Prettyman, whose nickname is Sitting Pretty. He lives in a place called the Blue Jay Hotel on the California Peninsula with a lot of other strange people. Broadway, Willie G., Ms. Duchess, all very offbeat types. And Sid is in his late 50s, has been divorced from his family for about 18 years. He really didn't get divorced, he just ran away from it. He had a job driving a Muni bus up in San Francisco and got up one day, just couldn't deal with married life. He has a wife named Sequoia, everybody calls her Squirrel. A son named Aristotle, deliberately named that, and a daughter named Cornelia. And they've all grown up. His son's become a prominent East Bay, Oakland, California lawyer. His daughter has done pretty well as a school teacher. She calls herself an educator and has married a man who works in a think tank. His wife is dying of cancer in this book, and he's chronically addicted to radio call-in talk shows, so much so that whenever he calls in on this particular station, they clear the lines and they say, Sitting Pretty is on, you know, put him on. And he's invited in the wake of this notoriety to make a television commercial, which he figures is going to make him rich. You know, he's an American. We all figure that it's our birthright to get on Newsweek once, the cover, you know, before you die. So he figures, this is it. They're all going to love me. My family's going to love me. And he's trying to re-endear himself to his family. He reads books like 90 Days to a More Powerful Vocabulary, so that you never know what's going to come out of his mouth. And in this particular section, in it, I tried to capture some of the poetry of you say everyday speech, but, you know, it's not really that way. Whenever you work in the vernacular, you're really working hard. Mark Twain taught me that, because in actual everyday speech, people say the same things over and over again. It gets monotonous, and as an artist, you have to figure out ways around that. So this is Sidney J. Prettyman talking. He's with his friend Willie G. Willie G. has quit a job in a wrecking yard because he's tired of grease in his under his fingernails and everywhere. He eats cheeseburger lunches and grease seeps all into the bun. One day he's watching this and he decides to get a better job. So he's going up to San Francisco from East Palo Alto to get a job, to apply for a job as a security officer to San Francisco Museum of Art. He later gets the job and becomes unbearably pretentious. Sid is going up to see somebody at this radio station. He doesn't know that he's going to be asked to do a TV commercial. And this is how it goes. Willie G. might know all about cars, how to rip them apart and put them back together, but he's one of the scariest drivers I ever had the displeasure of riding with. He slouch all down in his seat, use his left hand to steer, while he be steady twisting the radio knob and smoking with his right. He don't signal when he changed lanes, and he keep changing lanes. It ain't nothing for him to just all of a sudden shoot from the slow lane over to the fast lane, no turn signal, no hand out the window, nothing. Just zip right over there in front of some big monster truck, then speed up till he right on top of the car in front of him and tailgate the hell out of it and honk his horn. Really mash on it so that either the lead car got to get out his way or else he gonna zoom back into the lane to the right and try and overtake the sucker just so he can feel like he the leader of the pack or some fool nonsense. And all the time this mess is going on, he got the radio blasted, or either he reaching and feeling around the top of the dashboard or up under a background behind the seat trying to find some particular 8-track cassette to shove in this new tape doohickey he done just had installed. His tape cartridges scattered all over the front and back seats, along with girly magazines, old racing foams, newspaper, rags, rusty car parts, tools, Coke bottles, Dr. Pepper and Slitz cans, cigarette and candy wrappers, potato chip bags, old Colonel Sanders takeout boxes with dried up chicken bones sticking up out of them, mismatched socks and shoes, spare neckties, shirts and breeches all crumpled up, cans of Maine sardines unopened, half-eaten ice cream cones, orange peels, LP albums with no jackets all warped out of shape by the sun, Vicks inhalers, Christmas tree branches, a pair of psychedelic women's underpants, and ain't no telling what all, since buried down underneath all that is stuff I can't even make heads or tails out of. What it is a miniature version of the city dump, a traveling nut house on radio tires. This rebuilt Chrysler jacked up so high off the ground with the shocks he put in, until if you wasn't careful to check yourself right close when you opened the door to step out, you were subject to fall to your death. I mean, sail right to the pavement and dash your silly brains out. The racket from the radio and tape so damn loud, you gotta holler and shout and even scream just to be heard. Just a minute now, Willie G. shrieked while I'm trying to tell him about Marguerite and Squirrel and how much it mean to me to be riding up to talk over this deal, whatever it was, with my man Ed Jason. Hold on, Sit. I got something you just got to listen to if I can just locate the darn tape. Now here you go feeling and fumbling around the floor again. Ain't looking at the road or nothing. Swerving all in and out the lane. My throat's so from shouting. My nerves, every single one of them, done shrivel up and collapse. I just flat out give up. For some reason, don't ask me why, I got up that morning feeling like, well, Marguerite, she good looking. And Marguerite is someone he met in a liquor store, but she's very wealthy, and one thing has led to another. Marguerite, she good looking and educated and even sensitive when she lighten up on that bourbon. Plus, she consider herself some kind of soul sister and love to whip on me all that well-aged, exquisite, what the late Mr. Eon Fleming referred to as pussy galore. You ever see that picture, Goldfinger? Yet and still, behind all that, I still find it hard to fill her in on what's been happening with me all this time I've been away from my family. Joker, call herself Black Buddha. Jackleg bartending with a pistol close by at a joint called Booker's Tea Club up there around Marin City. Being the janitor for a television station in San Jose, which, combined with being around clubs and bars, I learned a little something about showbiz. Not to mention short-term gigs such as substitute mail carrying, short-order cooking, and dishwashing at places like Wang Lee's Ocean Cafe, plus working for people like Sam. Damn. That's what make time go by so quick. Just to tell about that, it take more than a book, and that don't include all the women I got messed up with, the hassles with people, the drinking too much, the times I spent throwing the shopping news and putting junk advertisements up on people's poaches just to keep up my room rent and wine habit, which, as you might guess, got out of control from time to time, though it's really pretty regulated now. All them times I was ready to give up but didn't. Them evil dawns and afternoons. How you gonna tell somebody was raised by professors the shit you've been through? How you gonna explain it? On what basis? Ain't no way they can comprehend it. Don't care how many library books they done laid up in and pondered and empathized with. Willie G. grinning, and I can see his mouth moving as he jammed another cartridge in the tape mechanism, but I can't make out what he's saying to save my life. What I really need now is for Miss Duchess to be there with us. She claims she can read lips when she feel like it. Luckily, it's a slow tune he put on, a ballad, got saw violins and stuff in the background, and place all that car-shaking, bamity-blam-boom, give a deaf mute a headache. He still play it loud, but I can kind of hear myself think for a change. What's this? Roberta Flack, man, she sure can't sing, can she? Say, Willie, I know it ain't none of my business, but don't you ever throw nothing away? Be with you in a second, Sid. He cut over two lanes to the right and almost got smashed by a Greyhound bus. I'm about to lose every bit of my breakfast. What was that all about? Sorry, man, but I had to get out of that lane, or else we'd have ended up way over on Van Ness Avenue. But that's where I want to go. The station's not too far from there. Oh, is that right? I thought you told me it was downtown. Well, actually, you can get there from downtown pretty quick. At least you done got me to San Francisco. Oh, just relax, Sid. A few minutes ain't gonna make that much difference. Now, what was you saying to me back there? Oh, it wasn't nothing important. But would you tell me this? Well, it's two things I want to know, really. First off, what's the significance of all them neckties you keep in the back seat? Well, no big thing. I just like to change ties whenever the mood hits me. I know it's strange, but that's just me. I'll be driving someplace. Suddenly, I'll pull over and put on a fresh tie. Spruce up my image. Ties is it. I see a broad I want to impress, and shoom, I whip my dark tie off and throw on my bright, multicolored, can you dig it tie. You know, it was one time a tie saved my life. Way back in the 60s when the Watts riot broke out, I was tooling around down there in L.A. looking for a job, had my shark skin suit on, beautiful shirt, and this respectable tie, looking like I'm really together, you see. I didn't know the riot was going on, but looked like the closer I got toward Watts, I started noticing how hostile the Negroes on the streets is looking at me at them stoplights. So finally, I pull into a Texaco station, black-owned, you know, and while I'm getting a fill-up, I ask the dude, how come people acting so funny when they see me? They say, oh, that's easy. You must ain't heard about the riots yet. These kids probably think you with the establishment because you are dressed rather clean and bougie, if you don't mind my saying so. That's all I need to hear, Sid. Shoot, I took my jacket off, my shoes, unbuttoned my shirt and let it hang open to my navel, found some old plastic thongs in the back of the shop, put them on, combed my hair all every which way until it looked all nappy and messed up, took the purplest tie I could find and wound it round and round my forehead. Shoot, after that I drove clean through Watts. Past flaming buildings, fire trucks, people busting windows to get them a leather coat, and not one of them clowns ever even looked at me except to flash me the victory sign or something. Yeah. I couldn't really see the main point of Willie G's story, but that didn't matter neither. I went on anyway and popped number two on him. What's them damn Technicolor drawers doing back there? We rolling off the freeway now, and Willie really cracking up. He laugh and snort and bang on the dashboard until his tears seeping out the corners of his eyes. I'm still wishing he would look at where he going some. Roberta Flack singing about how she tastes just like a woman and a light rain starting to come down. I sort of laugh a little myself just to keep Willie company, but I'm still waiting on his butt to straighten up and answer my question. Whoa, me, he says, simmering down. You sure a nosy dude, ain't you? What's so funny is I ain't sure myself whose drawers they is, but I think they belong to this little girl I picked up works at the NW over in Cupertino. I took her to the drive-in to see this vampire flick, and it hadn't been on 15 minutes before she comes snuggling up next to me. You know what she say? No, what she say, Willie? She say, crack me up. She say, ooh, man, this is too freaky and scary for me. I haven't been this grossed out since The Exorcist. Then she leaned back, reached down, and slid her drawers off. I thought at the time that she stuffed them in a purse, but, well, whosoever they belong to, I left them back there where people could get a look at them. They really are a conversation piece, aren't they? He go to having another laughing fit. And keep it up till we pull up in front of the KRZY studios. I keep on forgetting how crazy Willie G really is. Here you go, Sid. Hope you get back okay. I'm running over here to check on this security guard job. But I won't be heading back for a good day or two. As this chick stay over there in Twin Peaks, I used to fix cars for her mother. Watch your step coming out now. I kick some calcified French fries and well-gnawed barbecue spare rib bones out the way and open the door and take a deep breath before I make the big leap. Hey, Willie G comes shouting at me as he pulling off. Tell them people you got a good friend that wouldn't mind being on the radio too, yeah? two old ladies hobbling down the sidewalk, leaning up against one another, stop and turn around and look at him like he got to be tripped out. I'm cool and pretend like I don't even know the fool. If it hadn't been for me concentrating on circling that damn car with white light before getting in it, I might not be here today to tell y'all all this. Thank you. Thank you. Should I mention tomorrow? Okay, I'll be... Junior ballroom, 11 o'clock, and it's open to everyone. Yeah. And I'll be over at Black Studies in the afternoon.
Yeah, well, that's the Black Studies.
Oh, that's the Black Studies. What's the other one? That's Friday. Oh, okay, that has no bearing. Okay, listen to her, not me. Thank you again.